up, fellow travelers? Welcome to Traversing the Stars. I am JD. Please welcome my special guest today, Karen Allen. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I have to window covering your face there. Hi, I'm great.
Awesome. I know you're busy. We were talking a little off mic about that. So really appreciate you being here. It's really great to have you on the show.
Thanks.
Absolutely. So one of your first roles that you, when you first got into acting, was in Animal House, which, you know, is definitely, you know, classic comedy, kind of defined the college shenanigans model movie. So what was it like having your first foray into movie making, you know, involving such, like, you know, iconic talent, you know, like John Belushi, Harold Ramis, among others? What was that like?
Well, it was quite a wonderful way to enter the film business. I'd worked in the theater for about 5 years before that. And this was really my first film. I'd done one little indie film before that, that was in Washington, D.C., where I had worked in the theater. But no, it was great. I mean, it was a pleasure. I mean, I loved all those actors I worked with, and I'm still great friends with many of them and still see them quite often. And a lot of us, it was our first film. I mean, Tim Matheson maybe being an exception, certainly Donald Sutherland was a major exception.
Yeah, absolutely.
Steve Belushi, it was his, he'd done a little tiny part in one film previous to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we were all kind of in the same boat. We all were sort of newbies, and we didn't really quite know what we were doing, but John Landis was certainly a fun person to work with for actors, you know. I mean, it was only his second film or third film or something. So, you know, it was his first studio film. I think he'd done a couple of indie films. So, you know, it was great fun.
Oh, I bet. I got to imagine it was just nonstop laughs on set.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, everybody was in a good frame of mind, and we were out in Eugene, Oregon, and you know, we were all happy to be working on a film. You know, I don't think any of us had a clue that it would end up as well as it did, you
right.
know, that it would be as successful as it was and kind of really capture the imagination of such a large audience. But
Awesome. Okay. So the movie you're probably most well known for, or the role you're most well known for, I would say, is probably Marion Ravenwood from the Indiana Jones series. So, you know, that's another one that's, you know, I would say stood the test of time, you know, absolutely. So, you know, what's it like being a part of that legacy? You came back for Crystal Skull and
Fantastic. I mean, you know, it was there again. It was, I mean, that film, because it was George Lucas and Steven Spielberg working together for the first time. And both of them were coming off very successful films.
Right.
So, you know, there was a lot more, I think with John Landis and with Animal House, there was very little expectation. In fact, the studio didn't really want to make the film. But with this film, there was a lot of expectation. And I don't know that I experienced that as an actor, because, you know, I was a young actor. I'd done maybe 3 or 4 films at that point. So, you know, I just wanted to do a good job. You know, whether it was going to be successful or not, you know, I mean, first of all, no one has a clue whether a film is going to be successful or not.
Right.
And it really, you know, from the acting point of view, you do the same work regardless of, you know, whether you think a film is going to succeed or not. It was a real privilege and pleasure to get to be asked to do that role. And, you know, I had a great time. She's a wonderful character to play. She's, you know, full of life and strong and tough minded, and has a good, strong spirit. And, you know, it's probably one of the best introductions to a female character ever in a film that I can think of.
Oh, her drinking scene is amazing when she's drinking the other lady under the table.
That was a man. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, they're all men. I'm the only woman in that scene. You know, they're all, you know, Nepalese men who are all, you know, there. And, but yeah, no. It's great. It's been a great adventure in my life.
Absolutely. Now you mentioned about how talking about it was Spielberg and Lucas's first time working, first collab, big collaboration together. So right. was that tension on set more tangible, I guess, or?
Tension? No, there wasn't a lot of tension. No, I mean, they were old friends.
Yeah.
And they had written the script really together. Mm-hmm. So it was based on a story that Stephen had worked on with George and Larry Kasdan and the wonderful Phil Kaufman. Mm-hmm. I think Raiders of the Lost Ark was a sort of an homage to their boyhood. Those were the kind of those films. They're all a little older than I am. So yeah. I didn't really grow up with those films. I mean, the kind of films that I went to as Saturday matinees, they were a little different than that.
Right.
They were a little more 60s and less maybe 50s. But this was their childhood introduction to films. Yeah. So I think they love the idea of sort of taking everything from that world that so enchanted them as men, as young boys, and creating their own version of that. So there was not a lot of tension on Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's
I think it was a long shoot. I think we shot for between 4 or 5 months, and we were traveling a lot. We were in a lot of different locations. There were difficulties because we all got very, very ill from the water and such. It was also a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you definitely, the vibe that you talk about, their boyhood, kind of vibe, that really does come through. Because, I mean, that's again, Indiana Jones is a series that's defined adventure for, so many people. Like, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a very boyish spirit in it. I mean, it's that kind of film, that I think, kids discover when they're 8 or 10 or 12 or whatever. And then, people, what's great about Raiders of the Lost Ark is it gets passed from generation to generation.
So yes.
Somebody who saw it when they were 10 or 12, they can't wait to show it to their son or daughter.
Yeah.
And it has that. And I'm now starting to meet people who, they're showing it to their grandkids.
Right.
And so that's kind of, that's special. It doesn't happen very often in an actor's career.
Right.
In a film that has that kind of staying power.
Yeah. Well, that's got to feel really good. I mean, especially when you get younger fans like that.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah,
that's awesome. Lovely. That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Now I got to ask you about this one because I love horror. I've always loved horror. There's one that I watched as a kid that I feel like every time I bring up, people don't seem to remember it. But I thought the concept was the. You are. Oh. it's got the cool one of the coolest concepts that I remember as a kid. Ghost in the Machine.
Oh, Ghost in the Machine.
I love Ghost in the Machine. That's the only sort of
horror film I ever made.
Yeah.
You do?
Oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
I maybe only have seen it once.
Really?
It was a long time ago. And I haven't seen it since. And I think I remember thinking it was a really good script and a really good story. And I loved, it's a wonderful idea, scary idea that some malevolent being could get into our technology and could, kill people kind of through something like a microwave or through something like, it's a fascinating idea. It's oddly enough, I think I was somewhat disappointed when I saw it,
Really?
I think so. I should watch it again because, often when actors first watch a film, you can be quite disappointed. You have the film in your own mind. You've read the script and then you're acting it and you have a sense of what a film is going to be.
Right.
And it really is directly connected to your own imagination and your own sort of sense of the story that you see when you're reading it and working on it. And then there's the film in front of you. And sometimes sometimes the disappointment comes from just how different it is. It's different than what you imagine. And I've found that that happens often. And then I'll see a film numerous times and it takes me a while, but I'll sort of eventually come around to the film that was made as opposed to the film I had in my head.
Right.
And I never kind of caught up with Ghost in the Machine, but I should see it again just to see if you know, if I grow fonder with time, you know.
Well, I think like, you know, like, cause it kind of hit at this like really interesting time when I feel like, you know, in the, cause that was like kind of early to mid 90s. And I feel like there was like a lot more like modernization happening. It's kind of like, you know, like the best way I've described it to people is like, if you combine Freddy Krueger and the movie Hackers, it's like combine those two and you've got Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to see it again. I haven't seen it for, I don't know. It came out in the 90s. So I haven't seen it since.
I want to say 94. I think it was 90, maybe 93. It was definitely early to mid.
I think of everything in terms of my son's age. And I think he was about two or three when we shot it. So
yeah,
that seems right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was born in 90. So
yeah. I remember the one kill that happened specifically I thought was really cool was like, it was like the babysitter was sitting in the kitchen and then like something about there was a loose wire or something. And like the killer, like let the water from the dishwasher out and just electrocuted her in the kitchen. I thought that was so cool.
I have to say, short of something like The Shining, I'm not a horror film fan.
Right.
They actually scare me too much.
Really?
So I remember when I was going to work with John Carpenter on Starman, mm-hmm. you know, I'd never seen any of his films. And,
right.
And so I thought, okay, I'm going to rent some of his films and look at some of his films. So I got Halloween. Mm-hmm. I got The Thing. I got The Fog. I think I had those three at my apartment in New York. And I put on Halloween and I made, you know, I made it maybe half an hour into it. And I was just so freaked out. I turned it off. And then I put on The Fog and something very similar happened. But horror is really not my genre because I really am almost, I get too affected by it. I mean, it really
sensitive to it.
Me. Yeah. I mean, I'm just, and the images from it really stay in my head a lot.
Yeah.
So it's not, I have a hard time shaking violent images out of my
head.
So it's not so good for me.
Well, see, it's funny too, because I've had that, you know, I've heard that a lot. You know, from a lot of different people. And, you know, I don't know what it was. Like, I've always been drawn to horror myself. Cause I mean, when I saw that movie, I mean, it was like, I don't even know if I was 10 yet. Cause my friends down the street, their parents like let us watch everything. My parents tried to stop that, but it, you know, just didn't work. But it's just so, yeah, I've always like kind of been drawn to that genre. And the, you know, the macabre has always like kind of spoken to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, we used to watch like Chiller Theater and stuff.
Yeah,
they were very tame in comparison.
By comparison, yeah.
They were scary. I like scary things. I just don't like violent things. I don't like to see somebody electrocuted or somebody get stabbed. You know?
Yeah.
I like when the violence is, you know, like in The Shining, the violence is really all kind of in your.
It's all psychological.
Your imagination. There's very little that happens that's, you know, it's scary, but it's not, those are the kind of films that
I agree. I like those too. So we recently had your co-star and director from your newest movie on, William Sadler, huge fan of him, Sarah Schwab, love her. So tell us about A Stage of Twilight.
Well, A Stage of Twilight is based on a play that I got involved with maybe could be 8 years ago, nine mm-hmm. years ago. I was working with a theater company in New York City doing a play. I was in one play and then I directed another play. Mm-hmm. And Sarah's partner was the producer mm-hmm. and of both of the film I was in and mm-hmm. the film. And I got to know Sarah during that period of time. And she and I were just talking one night, have it over dinner or something. And she said she was thinking about writing a play that had mm-hmm. to do, she was interested in end of life issues.
Right.
Things that, you know, we don't talk about very much, you know,
right.
It wasn't feeling like they were talked about in the theater very often. and it wasn't feeling like, you know, we do a lot of killing in movies, but right. we do very little mourning,
right.
or very little dealing with the approach of death. And,
right. you know, and what it actually means and what it actually feels like, as far as I could.
And how people, yeah. how people deal with, you know, someone who they love becoming ill or even dying suddenly, and all right. those different areas. You know, there was a time in my life where, you know, people were constantly sending me very, very violent films. And I basically ended up saying to my agent, the only kind of films I want to be in, if they're about someone dying, only one person can die, and people have to really care.
It needs to be meaningful.
It's like, I don't want to be in films that have random violence.
Yeah.
Where violence is being glorified, or where, you know, you're just watching people murdered willy-nilly all
right.
around you. I just don't feel like that's something I want to say out to the world. I mean, you know, I feel like there's plenty of violence in the world. I don't know if we need to bring it into like our work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So anyway, she wanted to make a film, and she wanted to write mm-hmm. a play about it. And she wrote a version of the play. It had a completely different title. It's called Until Death, it was called.
Ooh, okay.
And Jeff DeMunn, do you know the actor Jeff DeMunn?
I know the name. I don't know if I could place him anything directly.
Wonderful actor. He's on the show Billions right now. He plays Maddie's father in Billions. But he's done incredible work in film. Anyway, he and I, who we had worked together before, we were cast together to play husband and wife in this play, and we worked on many, many versions of the play. We kept doing readings and getting feedback, and then she'd go back to work on it.
Refine it a little bit.
Brought in a really, really good director who worked with us on several versions of it as well. And somewhere along the line, you know, there was some frustration because, you know, it's hard to get a play on off Broadway or on Broadway. And particularly, she found hard maybe to get one that is about this issue, because people come to the theater more kind of wanting something lighthearted than they go out to dinner. You
know? Yeah.
But not always. I mean, there's a lot of serious plays off Broadway, but during COVID, even pre-COVID, she wrote this into a screenplay, and she had since made her first film, and it had come out quite well. And, you know, she had it in various film festivals and things, and it had been quite successfully received. Mm-hmm. And so she was feeling the confidence that she could take this. She hadn't written her first one.
Right.
She felt the confidence she could take this play she had written and turn it into a screenplay. So she sent it to me, and it had changed quite significantly.
Right.
Because the play only had three characters in it.
Right.
And it was very focused just on the husband and wife.
Right.
And she opened it up quite significantly. You haven't seen it.
Right? I haven't, no.
No, so she had opened it up quite significantly. And now there are really, you know, two parallel stories that are quite different stories in the film itself. And Jeff wasn't available to do the role in the film because he's shooting Billions. And so we started looking around for who might be an interesting choice. And Phil Sadler's name came up, and she had multiple conversations with him. And I knew him a little bit. I had met him before and really had a nice connection with him. So I thought that was an interesting idea. And then, you know, then the three of us got together and read through it and started, you know, doing a little bit more work on it and trying to get it into the kind of shape you want a screenplay to be in when you, you know, start shooting. So,
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm actually a little nervous to watch it you know, I think it's like, you know, you said about society, like, you know, like society, and I definitely have a tendency to do this myself. Like when the thought of like thinking about like death or, you know, the next step, whatever, I kind of tend to just push it away because it's just like, don't want to think about it. Don't want to think about it. I feel like a lot of people do that. So like, I'm kind of nervous to watch, especially because I'm in a, you know, I've been married for over 10 years. So I feel like it's going to very much speak to me.
It's interesting. It's interesting how people can watch people like murdered on screen.
Yeah.
And not really.
And no big deal.
Having to do with that. Multiple stabbings.
Yeah, I'll be cheering that on. But then when you actually have to think about it, it's like
every time on television where I felt like every show you turned on had to do with serial killers.
Yeah.
I live out in the country and I was like, I really can't, you know, it's like enough is enough. But yeah, no, it's interesting to explore these issues. And actually, I think more and more, there have been a lot of explorations now, particularly in film, but I've also seen several in the theater, which are about these issues and end of life issues, people, you know, dealing with Alzheimer's, people dealing with, you know, spouses or fathers or who are, you know, having to be in nursing homes or, you know, it's I think a very integral part of all of our lives. And if it's not now, it will be at some point. So I think these are very relevant. You know, I'm a baby boomer and, you know, we're a very large generation of people who are all kind of, you know, moving into, you know, the era where most of us have lost our parents at this point, gone through various, you know, processes with, you know, some people, their parents go very quickly and, you know, other people, they've had to really deal with things like dementia and Alzheimer's or diseases, you know, progressive diseases. And so I think that it's a real provocative and meaningful subject matter, particularly.
Yeah.
I understand that most young people are not that eager to dive into it yet.
Right.
You know, for my generation, I think, you know, we've all people in their 60s and 70s and, you know, they're all dealing with it with their parents.
Right. Yeah. Now. So how was that stepping into that? I mean, into that role? I mean, like, because I have to imagine it was challenging to get like into the headspace of like, because I mean, like in the film, the husband is dying.
Right.
So did that bring up any feelings for you? Or I mean,
huge. I mean, this year I lost my mother and my sister.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So my mom to a long, long dementia that lasted 5 years. My sister to COVID.
Sorry to hear that.
My dad a few years ago, he quite mercifully, you know, died of a heart attack very quickly. He would have been a terrible patient, you know, go into assisted living, or, you know, he was just such a kind of a proud
man.
You know, he, the idea of somebody taking care of him was abhorrent,
just wasn't in his
and my mom was much more graceful with
allowing
people to look after her, but my dad, it would have been a really rough ride. But so, you know, so it feels like a subject matter very close to my life. I had also had 8 years of working on the play before we
came to the film.
So I had a real familiarity.
Yeah.
And also it helped Sarah shape the character and shape the story between the characters. So it was very familiar territory to me by the time we got to the place where we were going to shoot it.
Nice. So now this was so Sarah was early with, like, as far as film directing, this is like one of her first ones, right?
It's her second feature film. A short film, and then this was her second feature.
Okay. So how was she as a director? How was it like, what was it like working with her?
I thought she did a very good job. You know, she was very highly organized. She brought in a cinematographer who I've known for years and years, who I love working with. And I thought she, you know, she had Brian Long, her partner in life, who was a producer I'd worked with a number of times before. So he was there as one of our major support systems. And no, I thought she did very, very well. I thought, you know, it's hard. It's very hard to direct. I mean, I've worked with a lot of first-time directors, and, you know, I will never understand why anybody would choose to direct a feature film without having done at least several short films, you know, to have.
Yeah.
But I've worked with directors who didn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
They're doing their first film, and it's a beautiful. And they have that deer in the headlights like through most of the film, and things, you know, it's on, you know,
it's like you don't know what you don't know until you're doing it or what it's like. Well, like,
no, I mean, I directed a short film and had a really wonderful time doing it.
Yeah.
But I knew, I mean, having spent 40 years on film sets,
sure.
I knew I couldn't fool myself for a moment that
right.
it wasn't going to be extremely challenging. And that there would be all kinds of things that I would question, and you know, and I just gave myself a really great support system around me, and I worked with actors that I knew really well, and you know, and it you can make your job certainly a lot more fun and a little
yeah.
easier if you you know, I don't know. I mean, I have not yet directed a feature, and I would be. Very, you know, eager to do it with the right piece of material for
right.
myself, and with the right, you know, if I was in control of certain things like the casting and like certain
yeah.
areas of things. But, you know, I think she has a lot of potential as a director. I mean, I think she will move
awesome.
Forward and continue to do things you know, indie filmmaking is very challenging. There's no
yeah.
ways about it. There's never enough money. There's never enough time. There's never enough of anything.
Right.
And you're kind of just trying to do the, everybody's just trying to do the best they can.
Yeah. Love it. I love it.
You're always wanting more time. And
yeah.
you're always wanting, you know, a longer schedule, and every day just seems to fly by. And
yeah. I love it. So I've been a fan of William Sadler for years. Love the Bill and Ted series. That's like, you know, one of my favorites. So, which actually, I think I just realized it is kind of interesting that he played death in that. And then he's like a character who's dying in this one. So that's pretty funny. But so what was it like getting into the husband wife role? Like, I mean, cause I mean, at that point you got to play, you're looking at playing characters that have been married for years. So like, how was it like achieving that chemistry with Mr. Sadler?
I think, you know, it happened very naturally between he and I, and we met, I can't remember exactly where it was we met, but we met and ended up sitting and having lunch, whatever it might have been, at a Comic-Con kind of thing.
Cool.
We ended up sitting and having lunch, and we just like hit it off, you know. We spent maybe an hour chatting, so we had this sort of initial chemistry, and this was 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
So you know, and then when I re-met him, when we did these readings and worked on the script a bit, he and I found that we had very similar, you know, there were things that we thought really needed to be worked on, that
right.
needed to, you know, some scenes that weren't quite working yet. And we had both had ideas of how, you know, we could help Sarah kind of really, you know, start to fine tune
yeah.
some of the scenes. And we were very much on the same page with that. So I think by the time we got to the shooting, I already felt very comfortable with him, you
yeah.
know. It's, you know, how does one bring a sense of a marriage, a 40-year marriage, to the screen? I think that it, you know, there's just a sense of, you know, I guess you just bring all your own life experience
yeah.
there in terms of your knowledge of being in a relationship of some, you know, weight and
yeah.
longevity. And then you know, you kind of try to find that with the other person, that sort of sense of, you know, of familiarity and
yeah.
of deep connection.
Yeah.
You know? And this is a very, it's a very, Sarah's written a very healthy relationship. I mean, these are two people who really love each other. They've had some tragedies in their life.
Sure.
Lost a child. So there are kind of these deep things that So I think we did it quite easily. It wasn't, it wasn't like we didn't have to work at it.
Didn't have to force it or anything.
No, not at all.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. That's awesome.
Did Bill say something similar?
I actually didn't get a chance to do that interview. So my partner, Jeff, did that interview. And it was funny too, because I've been making fun of him ever since we did that. Cause it was just, cause I, you know, working a full-time job at the moment, you know, while we do the podcast. And so it was like, the schedule was like, it was like right as I was getting off. So I couldn't make it work. So Jeff got to do that one. So yeah, but no, from I did get to watch that one, obviously, you know, edited and all that. But you know, it seemed, he had a very similar thought, you know, that you guys, you know,
I think we both felt very, very at ease with each other and happy to be doing this together.
I love it. So having lived through this role, having lived through some, you know, tragedy in your own life, you know, real life experiences, is there any additional wisdom, you know, that you've kind of gained from that you'd want to, you know, kind of share with everybody?
Oh gosh, that's such a big question. I don't even know how to answer that question. I mean, you know, I mean, losing a parent is it's tough. You know, these are people you've known since the day you were born. They're, you know, no matter what kind of a relationship you have with them, how hard it's been or how great it's been, or, you know, the depth of love and the, you know, the difficulties that you may or may not have been through with them at different times, they're still your parent, and you never have another father, another mother. And it's a profound experience to lose a parent. And losing my sister was really profound. I mean, you know, she was fairly way too young to die. And she passed just a month before the vaccine was available. And it felt very tragic to me and my, I have a younger sister. This is my older sister. I don't know that you know, it's hasn't even been a year. So I don't know that I have anything necessarily of a wise nature to say about anything to do with her death, except it was just, you know, very hard to lose her.
Yeah. And I imagine that's, you're still processing that, because.
Yeah. And she was at a very happy point in her life. And I just never imagined that I wouldn't have her for.
Yeah.
Long, you know? And I think to lose two people during COVID, you know, the really tragic part is, you know, nobody could be a part of their,
right.
You know, we couldn't be with them because we couldn't travel to be with them. My mom was in a memory care unit of a small little facility, and they were on complete lockdown. So, you know, I hadn't seen my mom for a year and a half, not because I didn't want to be with her, but because I couldn't be with her. So that was hard.
Made it that much harder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Oof. Well, hey, I really appreciate you being here. So where can everybody, forgive my ignorance, is the movie out yet?
Which movie?
Your movie. Stage of Twilight. Stage of
Twilight?
Yeah.
Oh no, she hasn't even finished editing.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, when you asked if I'd seen it yet, I was like, that's not out yet.
I thought maybe she had sent you a screener.
Okay.
I mean, she does have a rough cut that I've seen, but it needs a. I didn't imagine that you probably had seen it, because the sound is very raw and not finished. And generally, a director would not allow very many people to be in that state.
Well, I had for a sec, I was like, wait a minute. Where are we at time wise? Because like I feel like the year is just like flying by. Like I feel like
We shot it in June and July.
Yeah.
So you know, now we're in December.
Yeah.
So I think she is struggling to get it into a finished enough state to submit it to Tribeca. That was her goal. And I think the Tribeca deadline is sometime in January. So
okay. Awesome. Yeah, so we should be able to look forward to that sometime aiming for 2022.
Yes. And I don't, you know, we, you know, to get into Tribeca, yeah. you're on a wing and a prayer.
Right.
But yes, I think it will start showing up at film festivals sometime Perfect. In 2022, provided Omicron or whatever that bloody variant is called.
Yeah.
provided that doesn't shut down all the film festivals for yet again another year. But we'll yeah. see how that goes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, even though it is like, you know, like I said, the subject matter is a little bit like, kind of scared to approach it, but you know what? I'm excited to see it. So
did you see The Father last year?
Uh-uh.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
One of the most brilliant films I've ever seen. It's beautiful. Oh my God. You know what I saw today is Dune. I just saw the new Dune.
I'm going to see it at some point. I'm weird about remakes. Like mm-hmm. But I also like, you know, I feel like Dune is one of those ones where like, you know, like I'm not as into Dune as like, I love sci-fi, but like there are some sci-fi nerds that like go into Dune. I mean, there's so, like, there's so much to dissect with it, but you know, between it's the movies and the books.
Good,
and,
I have to say.
Was it done well?
Well, it was done well. And you know, the way that they're doing it, there's going to be many episodes. So
yeah.
I think the problem with the original ones, they tried to pack so much into it.
I know, when it was like 4 hours long. Something like that.
I don't remember how long it was.
It was long.
It's only maybe 2 hours. I didn't really know that it was just the beginning of the book. So
yeah,
it's like they're setting you up to do. I don't know how many episodes they'll end
yeah.
up doing. But it's nice because they can be a little bit more leisurely in the yeah. story. They're not trying to jam so much.
Yeah. Well, minute. I think that was an issue with the original movie. Is like because like. You can't just put Dune on in the background. Like you, like I know what's going on. Like you can't, you have to like really like, it's so intricate.
There's a lot. There's yeah. a lot. There's a lot of content there. And yeah, to pull together all those pieces and the performances are beautiful. I mean, it's wonderful.
All right. I'm going to have to check it out. I'm going to have to get on that.